No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
Good evening and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show that is on a mission to make America think again. I'm your host, former United States Senator Michael D. Brown, and along with my amazing co-host, Liberty Jones, we're interviewing the people who are making it happen, because it's what goes on in the shadows that really makes the world go round. So come, listen, and learn as we start our 12th year with many amazing guests, including our guest tonight, Noah Witherspoon. Noah is the chapter president of Turning Point for Weston, Florida. I'm sorry, I had a hard time reading that. Weston, Florida. And for those of you who might not know, Turning Point is an American nonprofit organization that advocates for conservative policies, politics on high school, college, and university campuses. It was founded by the late Charlie Kirk and Bill Montgomery. It is one of the fastest growing organizations on campuses in the world. And it's all over the world. I'm sorry, I've got an alarm going off. Before we start the show, I want to say something about what just happened. The assassination of Charlie Kirk was reprehensible. I think I speak for Liberty as well as myself when I say that although we may disagree much of what he had to say, we firmly stand behind his right to say it and be safe in doing so. He believed in open debate, which is an American tradition and a requirement of a healthy democracy, which is our obligation to preserve. Our deepest condolences go out to his wife, their two young children, and the rest of his family and multitude of friends and followers worldwide. I ask that we pause now for just a moment of silence in his honor. Okay, welcome to the show, Noah Witherspoon. We're glad to have you with
us tonight.
Thank you
so much.
Let's start right at the beginning. When I first talked to you, Noah, you said that you felt that Charlie's legacy needed to be preserved. What do you see as Charlie's legacy?
I say that Charlie's legacy is a amazing, amazing exoteric value of conservative politics and of conservative values. I believe that his love for the GOP is one facet of his amazing life and also his commitment to faith.
Okay, and tell me, give me an example of one of the policies that you see as an example of Christian values and mm-hmm. what we need to do here in America to institute Christian values in our politics. Give me an example of that.
Right. Well, I think one massive win that we had was Dobbs. I'm sure that you were familiar with the Supreme Court case. I found it so interesting because Charlie was so for the life and the sanctity of unborn children. And in Dobbs, that ruinous case, or at least in my opinion, ruinous case, Roe v. Wade was overturned. And I believe that that was just a massive victory for us. And it was mostly because of young people getting out and protesting and putting these sorts of things in the federal courts and then appealing it all the way up to the Supreme Court. So I do believe that one of those, one of his policy positions was at least represented within that win for the conservative group, but really worldwide community, because it's not just an American thing. It's a worldwide disdain for abortion and Roe v. Wade that really had been overturned with Dobbs. So I think that that's just one of the examples of his the conservative policy wins that he really counted on and lauded.
he believed in, that was his stance on abortion. He spoke out about birth control. It doesn't seem they believe in birth control either. So how do those two policies reconcile with each other? What is he saying, actually? Is he saying he doesn't believe in sex?
No, I don't think that he's saying that he doesn't believe in sex. I do believe it's an important idea to understand that things have consequences. And Charlie was a man who believed in consequences. As you know, that he was an incredible man of faith. And I believe that his stance on birth control was simply an affect of his stance on consequences.
Well, I got to tell you, as a Christian, before I let my lovely and brilliant assistant, who is chomping at the bit, to ask the question before I ask her to get in, let me tell you, as a Christian, I don't think he was a good Christian. I don't think that any good Christian can represent a man that said, I am your retribution, because Jesus Christ said, I am your salvation. You want to go, Liberty? Do you have a question?
Yeah. So what a special honor to have you here on the show today. And I think you make a great point about the power social media has when mobilizing people. You know, I'm a bit confused. I was wondering you could inform me, because I know that Charlie Kirk on his podcast, he oftentimes went on to celebrate Roe v. Wade, but I didn't know that he actually had a big role in the actual decision of Roe v. Wade.
Well, Turning Point as an organization hosts a large number of young women. Actually, they had their annual women's conference last year. These young women are absolutely against abortion. And if you would have listened to Charlie Kirk's keynote speech, you would have understood his view on it perfectly.
Well, let me just say that I admire you for coming on the show, Noah, because I think you know that Liberty and I are liberals, but we, in our quest to make America think again, we understand that you need to see both sides of an issue in order to have an appropriate opinion. And so that's why we wanted you on the show. So let me, before we go any further, thank you for coming on and being brave enough to come on with a couple of liberals who probably understand. I've read some of your work, and it's very well written. You're very smart. And I'm sure you understand that we have a lot of disagreements with Charlie. But let me ask you, one of those things that I read, one of your op-eds that I read called MAGA Generation Taking Over Capitol Hill, you talk about a lot of things that needs to happen on Capitol Hill and what these young people from Charlie's group Turning Point are bringing to the table, but you don't talk about what the change is. Can you specifically tell us what do you want to see as change? Something maybe broader than a ban on abortion, but what you hope the direction of the country will be?
Well, I'm not sure if you read my op-ed on the federal judges, but I would like to see a lot more legal change. There isn't a lot of change over the DOJ. I think that we need to see a lot more of that. I think that we should be appointing more special assistants to give more young people a chance to grow in those executive agencies, especially the DOJ, but also a lot of other agencies like the National Intelligence Agency. I would also like to see a lot more faces in FBI and CIA. I think that we're seeing that with Director Radcliffe, and then we're seeing that with Director Patel. I'm really, really enjoying that, and I'd like to see a lot more young faces. Also on Capitol Hill, I know that a lot of people start off, you know, being aides and stuff, but I would like to see a lot more people running for office and a lot more economic change. We're not very bold on economics. Donald Trump is bold on economics, but the rest of Washington really isn't. They think that diplomacy trumps economics, and they're scared to put on any sort of retaliation at all. But I do believe that that's necessary when people are handicapping our diplomatic policy or the goals of America. So those are just a few examples of things that I'd like to see.
Well, that's very inspiring in some respects. I'd like to see more young people too. But let me also point out that the economy is doing really poorly. Every sentence that Donald Trump has made has not really led to any economic success, except for the stock market. And you know what? I'm not a young person, Noah. I'm an old person, and I'm making money hand over fist in the stock market while poor people all over the country are suffering. Liberty, say something brilliant.
Yeah, so very interesting points. I have a question for you because I actually thought your biography was really interesting. I read it online. It says you're politically active since the age of 11. I wanted to know what first drew you to politics and to conservative politics. You know, where's that background from?
Well, I was first drawn into politics when I was 5 years old. I was a big admirer of President Obama, actually. And then I started reading a bit more. And I just had such a big affection for the office of the President of the United States. And I started thinking, oh, my God, this guy controls everything. Who are these people? And then I just started reading, and I read about Herbert Hoover, and I didn't really like what he did. I read about Woodrow Wilson. I definitely didn't like what he did. And then I finally got to George H.W. Bush. And I was like, okay, well, he was a one-term president, but he did okay. Then I got to George W. Bush, and I was quite impressed. And then I got to Obama, and I realized that everything that I had loved him for was so superficial. And I realized, what does the opposing party have to offer? And I realized that the opposing party had so much to offer. They had economic common sense. They had family values. They had everything that I stood for. And that's what drew me in.
Can I ask you about something? Well, let me do this. I want to read a couple of statements that Charlie made, and then I want to ask the question. Charlie called Martin Luther King a myth and called him awful. He said that the Civil Rights Act was a great mistake and that Black Americans were better off in the 1940s and they committed less crimes. He made disparaging remarks about the First Lady, Michelle Obama, and also, you know, made some horrible remarks about DEI when it came to a crash that killed a lot of children in the District of Columbia who were on their way back from skating competition. So let me ask you, as a person of color, don't these statements bother you? Don't you think they're racist?
No, I don't think that a criticism of a public figure is racist in any way. If he's saying that Martin Luther King wasn't a good person, well, that's just objectively true. Martin Luther King was not a good person. According to his own writings, he didn't believe in very much values for women, and he certainly didn't respect their autonomy when participating in intimacy. So Martin Luther King was not a good person by any means other than on the subject of civil rights. I do admire his words. His actions did not quite say the same thing. The Civil Rights Act, it was a mistake because it really just empowered a bunch of people to be dependent on the government. And if you listen to the quotes of Lyndon B. Johnson, quite honestly, they're not very flattering either. I think that we should be focusing on the people in history who have negatively impacted our race rather than people in history who have positively impacted our country, like Charlie Kirk. So that's my view on it.
Well, let me tell you something about Dr. King. You're wrong about his view on women. And you speak out of both sides of your mouth if you talk about his intimacy, because you've got a guy that you respect and admire who says, I grab women by the pussy. There's no less respectful thing to say about a woman than that. Donald Trump does not have a single ounce of respect for women at all. Look at all the women and look at all the Black people in his cabinet. He's a racist and a misogynist. Liberty?
Oh, okay.
You can respond to that if you want. If you disagree, I don't want to sure. Try to cut you off. If you have a disagreement with that, Dr. King had affairs. Yes, he did. But I mean, there's nobody on the right now that has a right to criticize him for that.
Well, and Dr. King said that young women had to be trained to have intimate relations with him. I mean, Dr. King was not a perfect person. That's what I'm saying. And that's what Charlie would say. Now, is Donald Trump a perfect person? Absolutely not. Do I like his intimacy record? No, I don't. But do I like what he's doing as president? Absolutely. And has he been a faithful husband? I don't know. But have him and Melania had a good and fruitful relationship? Yes, they have. And I respect that. But
why did they have a fruitful relationship? Because they have a son?
Well, I believe that their son is a massive part of it. I also believe that their dedication to continue serving this country is a big part of it as well.
Well, I don't see Melania doing much, but I got to tell you that Dr. King had several children. And so did Medgar Evers, and so did the Kennedys and all the other people that were assassinated during the 1960s. But let me tell you, when we get into personal conduct, you can't have it both ways. You can't talk about the personal conduct of liberals and not consider the personal conduct of conservatives as well. I don't stand up for what Dr. King might have done in his personal life. A lot of it is rumor that can't be proven, by the way. And beyond that, let me also say that he was a dedicated man of God. He was a dedicated man of God. Donald Trump doesn't know one end of the Bible from the other. Go ahead, Libby. You got anything to say?
So, you know, something that I think is really important when looking at both sides of the coin, to public Republicans or Democrats, you know, is the concept of morals, because at the end of the day, that is what our public policy stands on. That's what our country government lies on, right? And you bring up that one of your favorite parts is Trump's family morals. Can you explain what that means to you as a conservative? Because to me, as also a woman of color, I have not really seen him employing a lot of or incentivizing family morals, especially when he's ripping young kids away from their mothers.
Well, you mean just like Obama did, and just like George W. Bush did, and just like almost every other president in recent history has, right? But I do believe that it's an important subject to focus on family morals. You're absolutely right, Liberty. I do think that it's important to look at how Barron has grown up, to look at how Ivanka has grown up, to look at how Donald Trump Jr. has grown up. All of his children have been wildly successful in the world of business. He's teaching them the family business. That sort of fraternity and that sort of paternity is amazing and admirable in any father. And then if we look at the family life, he's always with his grandchildren. He loves to golf. I admire things like that, Liberty. And I think that that is what we should be looking at.
Well, let me tell you again that I've been financially successful as Donald Trump has. I took the fortune that my father left me, and I increased it by 1,000-fold. The difference is that instead of leaving me $100 million, he left me $50. And you know, so all his children have been successful. You know what? You give me $100 million, I'll put it in a passbook savings account, and I'll be successful too. But let me ask you, do you believe, as Charlie believed, that some people, it's acceptable to let some people die in order to secure our Second Amendment right? Right?
What I believe is that there are going to be costs in history. There are costs for everything. There's a cost in war. There's a cost in economic turmoil. There's a cost in everything. And I believe that Charlie was echoing that sentiment. And unfortunately, I have to agree with that sentiment because it is factually correct.
And so it was...
Well,
to protect the Second Amendment?
Well, in order to protect the right to have other people be protected, I do believe that that is a caveat. And I believe that that can be fixed. I think we need to put more regulations on guns. I believe that we need mental health checks more. I certainly believe that we need to have more targeting on cartels or gun traffickers. I don't think we're doing enough to combat that. And I think that a lot of these illegal guns are pouring through the country from them. And I think that we need to fix that.
Well, the gun traffickers are the National Rifle Association, and the cartels are the manufacturers of weapons in America. We have a problem with weapons on the streets in Washington, D.C. And when we pick them up, They say Remington on the side. They say Colt on the side. They say Ruger on the side, maybe occasionally, but they're just as much, they're made by Americans, and they're peddled by a trade association that's called the National Rifle Association. Liberty, got anything to say?
Yeah, I had the opportunity to read one of your pieces about alligator Alcatraz, and I found your viewpoints very interesting. So, do you believe in climate change?
Absolutely, I believe in climate change.
Okay. I think often about the disproportionate impacts of environmental harm on minorities and working class communities, which are the bulk of our country. Do you think that the, you know, decision to have that alligator Alcatraz in a state as prominently hurricane oriented as Florida, do you think that those conservative policies adequately address those equity concerns?
I'm not sure if you know this or not, but alligator Alcatraz is located on a piece of swampland. All right. So I don't believe that we should be worrying about hurricane issues there. But I do think that we should focus on the important things, the much more important things, rather than things that we can barely affect change on. I do believe that we should be focused on deportations. And if you read my whole article, then you would get my rant about Judge Kathleen Williams. But I do believe that we should be reporting and talking about and fixing issues that are within our realm to fix, right? And I think that that's something that isn't being echoed very much.
Okay, so that's an interesting take, because I don't think deportation would be an issue if it wasn't created as to be one currently. And I think the environment is something that has been an issue for over 100 years. And even though it is a swamp, the way the environment works is you need all components to work together.
All right. Well, if you would live in Florida, as I actually do, there aren't many people living near Alligator Alcatraz. And if you believe that a few toilets are causing so much environmental impact, they're causing hurricanes, then maybe you're the uneducated one on the ecosystem. So I'm very, very sorry about that, Liberty. I'm sorry.
Well, let me just say that you put a concentration camp-like facility in the middle of a swamp, in the middle of a swamp, to make a point. What do you think about murdering Venezuelans who you think are dealing drugs, but you don't have any proof, or you don't provide any proof, you don't provide any due process, you just murder them? You know, in D.C., if you're a police officer and you see somebody giving somebody fentanyl and you pull out a gun and shoot them, you're charged with murder. So explain to me how Donald Trump didn't murder 14 people.
I am not going to make a point about that ridiculous pivot, because you guys got beat on that point. But I will say this. I believe that we need to stop cartel members in every single facet of American life. Donald Trump is doing what almost every president has done. And if you want to talk about airstrikes, then we can talk about Obama continuously striking civilians during his entire presidency. But I believe
those were enemy combatants. These people, you enemy, have no proof enemy. That. You have no proof that these people have done anything. There's been no due process here. You know, do you think a police officer has the right to shoot a known cartel member on the street instead of arresting? There's no way that you can say 11 people in a motorboat would not surrender to a Navy destroyer. It's a ridiculous statement. They would have surrendered. They were turning around to go back when they were destroyed. He's trying to make a point that he's a badass.
Senator,
you know, Senator Brown, go ahead.
I admire your, quite honestly, very, very Christian-like sympathy for criminals, but I am not one to be sympathizing. I am one who wants to take out criminals wherever they come from, especially if they're illegally trafficking narcotics into this country.
Except if you're elected president. He's been convicted of many felonies, but you stand firmly as a Christian.
False felonies that were Class B. Well, thrown out. I mean, come on.
How can you be convicted in a court of law, but on the supposition of somebody thousands of miles away with no proof, convict and execute 11 people, and you're okay with that? But you're not okay with somebody that's been convicted in a case in a court of law. Look, I think the charges that were brought against him, he's done so many worse things that I wasn't interested in what he was doing with women, to be honest with you. But he's been convicted in a court of law. And we are a system of laws in this country. That's the only thing that separates us. When you'll get to a point where you study people like Hobbes and Locke, and they'll tell you that the only difference between a civilization and people that live in the wild are a system of laws. And that's what we are, a system of laws, and he's been convicted in the courts. So if you're for against people that have been convicted, if you see them as criminals, he's certainly a criminal. And I won't say that there's never been another criminal in the White House. I'm not that naive. But I've got to just be honest with you. I think you're very smart, and I think that, and I understand some of the things you believe, and that's great. I think that change is a positive thing. But I got to tell you, as a Christian, I really have a hard time understanding how Christians support a man who says, "I am your retribution." Jesus said, "I am your salvation." And I have news for everybody out there that's a Christian nationalist. If you've been told that accepting Jesus Christ as your savior is what you need to be a Christian, you've been lied to. Accepting Jesus Christ as your savior is the start. Following what he said makes you a Christian. And he said, he didn't say deport them. He didn't say lock them up. He said, "He who hath no sin cast the first stone." And if you believe that Donald Trump has no sin, then unfortunately, Noah, you're the one that's not naive, not me.
All right. But I do, I really, really do admire your ability to flip-flop from biblical rhetoric to political rhetoric. But quite honestly, I'm not one for turning. As Margaret Thatcher said, I'm going to continue going through the path that destroys these people who are illegally trafficking narcotics. And if you are going to say that we're a nation of laws, but also don't really deport people because it's kind of ungodly, I am someone who is saying it is a nation of laws, and these laws must be upheld for the order of our society for when Christ returns.
Well, let me tell you that I cannot say this to you because I've seen your picture and I know that you're a man of color. But for me, and for 99% of Americans that live in this country, their drug dealing ancestors came for the same reason the drug dealing ancestors are coming today. These guys aren't coming here to commit crimes. They're coming here for the same reason that people have been coming here for hundreds of years, to get a better life. It's why my grandparents came here. And if you're an African American, you might have been brought here against your will. But if you came of your own volition, you didn't come because you were, royalty in Europe and decided to take a vacation. You came because you were the scum of Europe, because you were the scum of the earth looking for, but you were persecuted for whatever reason. And you came here for a better life. And this is the same reason that people are coming here now. So the false narrative that's out there is that there's criminals, that these people are all criminals, and that they're here to do things that are nefarious. They're not. They're here for a better life. And in fact, we know, because we keep statistics on these things, that illegal immigrants cause no more crime than the rest of us. The people in this country cause as many crimes every day as anybody that's here illegal.
That's simply because of quantity, Senator Brown. That's simply because of quantity.
It's a percentage. The percentage of people, it has nothing to do with quantity. not the number of people, the percentage of illegals that cause crime is no higher than the percentage of American citizens that commit crimes. And that's just a fact.
I see. No. 100% of illegal immigrants have committed a crime by illegally entering this country. So on that method,
so did our ancestors. So did our ancestors. My took the asylum, but most of them did not. What?
Conquerors versus immigrants. Our settlers conquered this land. All right. They did not immigrate here. This was not already a nation of laws. This was not already a nation of civility. This was a nation of a ragtag group of Native Americans. Did they have a right to be here?
That's not true. You really don't know anything about this. Look, you're talking to a man that works with Native Americans. Now, I don't want to talk over you, but what you're saying isn't true. The Iroquois had a very structured system of laws. So did the Cherokee, many of the tribes out west. Now, they didn't get along with each other in many occasions, but they were very structured, and there was a civilization here. And what we did was we stole it from them, which has happened all over the world. And I'm from Italian descent, so I'm not going, you know, Christopher Columbus was not the nicest person to Native Americans, but we didn't come here and organize Native Americans. We still persecute our Native Americans. Let me tell you that, Mr. Witherspoon. God. I work with Native Americans, and they're still persecuted. And they're persecuted by nice Christian nationalists. That's the problem. So I don't want to fight with you, though, because I wanted you to have you on the show to voice your opinion. So, Liberty, ask another brilliant question and get me away from being angry, which I don't want to be, because I like
you. Well, you know, I think this is, I really do admire how passionate you both are. That's why you're involved in what you do, because you really have movements to continue and start. But I must say, a big issue that I have with President Trump and his administration is that, and of course, this is how politics work. I'm sure there have been many other people that you definitely know who have done the same thing. But he has built his entire empire on pointing fingers and shifting blame. It happens all the time. Actually, in this conversation, it happened at least 30 times already. That's a stray number, but it's something that it's a reoccurring theme to me to see this shift in blame. So many times you say, oh, well, Obama did that too. Well, what did Trump actually successfully do? In your opinion, I want you to, you know, what are you proud of that he has done other than deportation, which is also shifting blame to a minority of people? What has he successfully done, in your opinion?
Well, on one point, on the deportation aspect, I'm going to shift blame for crime.
That was not my question.
I said one point on the question, if you would allow me to fully answer, Liberty. I appreciate your enthusiasm, but yeah. All right. So one facet of the question, thank you. One facet of the question, I believe that illegal immigrants should always be deported, because I'm going to shift blame for the crime to a criminal. Now, on another facet of your question, Donald Trump has accomplished so many good things. He has ended 7 wars. He has appointed one of the most amazing Secretary of State I've ever seen. His vice president is doing an immeasurably good job on the international stage, meeting with the president of Venezuela. And then he's also making strides with Keir Starmer, although that's briefly being overturned with the Palestinian recognition. However, I do believe he is doing an amazing job fighting the war against terrorism with Qatar and Iran. I think he's doing smashing with that. And then also, as Senator Brown said, the stock market is going extremely well. The Dow had one of its top earning days in history. So I do believe he's succeeding on almost every single scale. And now with the interest rates being lowered, we are going to be seeing a lot more lending and a lot more money being pushed into this great, great American economy that is luminary for its fabulous, fabulous, fabulous way of operating. And I couldn't be more proud now than I ever am. I mean, this is the most proud I've ever been to be an American and be under the Trump era. And also, he's appointed so many women. I mean, Caroline Leavitt, Susie Wiles, the first female White House chief of staff. He is making strides for women. He is making strides for America. He's making strides for foreign policy. He's making strides for the economy. He's doing a spectacular job, better than I ever thought he would. And he's doing a stellar job on almost every single subject. So that's really what I think he's won on. And I think that those aspects of his presidency are undeniable for anyone.
Well, let me stand up and deny a few of them for you, okay? The more people are dying in Gaza today than when he took office and promised to end the war on day one. More people are dying in Ukraine today, and Vladimir Putin has made him look like a fool. Interest rates are coming down because the labor market is in the toilet right now, and they have to do something to save the economy. Inflation is up. He has the people that he's appointed. He's appointed a woman that was in charge of professional wrestling to be the head of the Department of Education. He's appointed an idiot who puts out on Snapchat our battle plans to the head of the Department of Defense, which is now the Department of War. Because he's such a good negotiator. He hasn't negotiated one deal, not a single deal yet, in the favor of the United States. The man has had seven businesses. All of them have gone bankrupt. Every single business that he's ever had has gone bankrupt. He really has been and you know what? The stock market's going great. So rich people like me are like, Donnie, go. But it's people like you, Noah, who are going to be hurt by this. It's people like you. It's my children. It's the young people of America who are going to be hurt down the road. I'm not going to be hurt. I'm a rich white guy. Hey, I got news for all you rich white guys. Nothing to be worried about. But everybody else, whoa, watch out.
Senator Brown,
go ahead, please.
I'm not being hurt by anything. I'm actually doing extremely well. I believe that your view of the world is shaped by your liberal milieu, and I think that they are massively corrupting you, honestly. But I am going to say that Donald Trump has had an innumerable amount of businesses, and not every single one of them has gone bankrupt.
Name one of them that hasn't. Name a single one of them that has.
Well, I'm not quite sure about his hotel chain. I don't think that went bankrupt.
He has no hotel chain. He puts his name on hotels and is paid honorarium.
He's not building a hotel in Dubai. All right, got it. All right, but Senator Brown, I think you're wild.
Well, that's great. They gave him an airplane. Oh no, I'm sorry. That was another Arab country that gave him an airplane that bribed him in front of the public.
Saudi Arabia.
Look,
and
Noah.
That's a lie.
They did bribe him. They gave him a plane that's worth $1 billion. What the hell do you call that? Yes.
No.
Yes, it goes to his library when he leaves office. It goes to him personally when he leaves office. This bullshit about them giving it to the American public is wrong, Nolan. It's just wrong. They didn't give it to the American public. Yeah.
Senator Brown, they gave it to the American government, and it was.
Well, then why are they taking it apart, Noah?
Afterwards, his presidential.
Why are they taking it apart?
Okay.
Because it's bugged. That's why they're taking it apart. You know, you know what? My opinions have been shaped by 72 years of experience, Noah. And, you know, I'm not going down a rabbit hole. I'm somebody that's been out there and done it. I've been elected three times to office. I've worked in politics for more than 40 years. And I can tell you that this is not based on some skewed view of the world because I'm a liberal. It's based on my experience. And my experience is that this man is a two-bit thimble rigger. He's nothing more than a three-card Monte con man. And we bought that. And unfortunately, so have young people. Now, Charlie Kirk is somebody I respected because he was out there giving it, debating. He was out there telling it like he saw it and listening to people that wanted to respond and debating them. And that's what I'm trying to do with you. And I hope I'm giving you enough room here to say how you feel. But I certainly don't agree with that. Can I ask you one simple question? Should Jimmy Kimmel have been fired?
I believe that actions have consequences.
And free speech should be an action that has consequences. Charlie certainly had consequences. But do you think that Jimmy Kimmel should have had consequences? He didn't say anything about Charlie Chris. All he said was that the MAGA people were trying to blame it on the liberals, which they are. And I'm not saying that the liberals aren't trying to blame it on the MAGA people, but all he did was speak truth to power. And he was threatened by the head of the FCC. I mean, he was threatened publicly. Was he not? We can do this the hard way. We can do it the easy way.
Are you going to allow me to answer a question?
Yes, I am. But I come from North New Jersey, from the area that the mafia used to run in the Italian neighborhood. And I can tell you, we can do it the easy way or we can do it the hard way is a threat. Go ahead.
Okay. The chairman of the FCC is supposed to enforce rules. And we simply cannot be passing off false information on television. Now, on your comment about free speech, it depends on what you qualify as free speech. Do you qualify being in blackface as free speech? Because Jimmy Kimmel did that quite often. And I wasn't a big supporter of him ever since I've seen a lot of the horrible material that he touted on The Man Show. I don't believe that he should be employed by any network, especially after that whole blackface fiasco and a bunch of other comments that he's made. But then when you add on that he lied about the shooter of a massive influential figure such as Charlie Kirk, I think the answer is clear. ABC should have fired him.
Why did he lie? How did he lie? How did he lie? Can you prove that MAGA people aren't pointing their fingers at liberals? You're not listening to the news. And look, if you think his comments
are black,
if you think lies are wrong, then I hope you don't listen to Newsmax or OAN or Joe Rogan or any of these people or the President of the United States, actually, who not a day goes by that Donald Trump doesn't lie. Not a single day goes by that he doesn't lie. And so if lies need to be censored, then certainly he needs to be at the top of the list. But Jimmy Kimmel, you've given your opinion, and that's fine. What do you think of the idea that the government just spent $50,000 to put pictures of Donald Trump up on the Department of Labor, the Agriculture Department, and other buildings in Washington? Big, giant posters. You know what they look like? They look just like the posters of Mussolini. So tell me, what do you think of that? And we paid for it.
I actually read in the Wall Street Journal that was liberal protesters putting that up. But if it was the Trump administration, then it is federally mandated that posters and pictures of the President of the United States and the Vice President must be displayed at every federal building.
And why has it never been done before then? Why has that never been done?
It has been done before. Photos of the President and the Vice President are in every federal building.
They are, but they're not hung on the outside of the building, like campaign posters.
Well, that's then.
They're not. They're pictures inside the building. Several of them he had removed from the White House, you know. But they are. But that's never been done before.
Okay, well, that's an aesthetic issue, and I don't deal in the world of design. But I do know that it is federally mandated, and he's going in accordance with the law. So I have no problem with it.
Look, that's not in accordance with the law. Yeah, the accordance of the law
absolutely.
Is that their pictures and the pictures of other presidents are in federal buildings. Yes, they are. They're in courtrooms. They're all across the United States. But they're not hung on the outside of the building. But anyway, literally, please jump in here and help us both out.
You know, this has been an extremely enlightening conversation for me. It seems like both of you are exactly the same, but in very different ways. And I think that's something we need to realize here, guys, that anyone would not have the power they have without having people who follow and support them or people who are against them. And at the end of the day, I'm sure that if I ask you what you want from this presidency is a better America, that's what we want too. We want the same things. And you say we're being fed information. I thought the same thing about you before you actually said that and realized that maybe we're both in the wrong here. And I think that's what's so beautiful about having these conversations is that if we really step back and realize where our heart really lies and what we really want for each other and for our country, it is the same thing. It's just these people's decisions and their actions define the way we think is best to go about it. When in reality, it doesn't have to be black and white. And that in reality, the more division we have, regardless, the more power they will have, either the Democrats next term or the Republicans this term. And so I think it's inevitable. This conversation is never going to end. It can go on forever. But I think we need to sit back and really realize that we are the same and we want the same things. And that if we start moving with more compassion for each other, maybe we can actually succeed in having a better America. Because I'm sorry, the number one thing you need for a good economy is good workers. How are you going to have good workers if everybody hates each other? And that's what I think.
Right. Well, the labor statistics say that we have amazing workers, but personally, I'm someone who dives and lives in the world of reality, just as you do, Liberty. I inherently disagree with you on so much. And you're right, we do want a better America, but we must look at the way to get there. And I think that we are really there. I think we're doing an amazing job on the foreign policy stage, economically, on especially with our new DOJ, the current attorney general is doing amazing, and the solicitor general, don't even get me started, he's amazing.
It's okay for you that not the majority of the country agrees? It's the minority that is fine, so it's okay? What about the rest of the people? It's a nation.
Liberty, I appreciate your enthusiasm, but please don't yell at me. I do believe that the majority of the nation would like this. And as I'm sure many of you have seen, President Trump's poll ratings have gone up. The last time that I checked them, they were at 55%. So the majority of the nation really, really is liking this. And I stand with Americans and what they think and what they want. And I concur with them when I say we are, once again, the greatest country on planet Earth. Now, on the division aspect, everyone's going to be divided. We all have disagreements, but one side is right and one side is wrong. And I think that that's just what's true in everything, on crime, on morals. One side is right and one side is wrong.
Well, let me ask you, just before we let you go, if we are the greatest country on the face of the earth, why do we need to make America great again? America's always been great, and I agree with that, and I agree that we are the greatest country. And before I let you go, I just want to say a few things about you, Noah. I think that you give me great hope for the future because I think you're engaged at a very early age. I don't agree with much of what you said, obviously, but I think you're very smart. And I think that Liberty's absolutely right. I think you and Liberty and I all want the same things, but we just have different ways of going about it. And we need to have this open conversation, and we need to all sit back and think about what's going on, because it's time to end the thing that happened to Charlie Kirk, that happened to the Minnesota couple that was murdered in their home, and the two other legislators who were shot, that happened to Gabby Giffords, that happened to Solise, that happened to the governor of Pennsylvania, Shapiro. We have to stop the violence. We have to continue to talk to each other. So let me thank you, Noah, for coming on the show and talking with us. I hope that you will come back again sometime.
Absolutely.
And we can continue our conversation. And we'll see in a year if you feel the same way. And if I feel the same way, maybe we'll both feel differently, but or in 6 months or whatever. But I wish you continued success. And let me just say to you, on behalf of Liberty and myself in the show, that you also have our condolences, because I know you thought the world of Charlie Kirk, and I've lost people like this in politics, and it's a very hard thing to go through. So thanks so much for coming on, and we'll see you again in the near future, I hope.
Absolutely. I would love to come back on. This was a wildly engaging and intellectually stimulating conversation. I can't wait to talk to you guys outside of this. This was amazing. Thank you guys so much for having me on. And it takes a lot of bravery and it takes a lot of cojones to have on someone from the other team. So thank you so much.
Well, just study hard, Noah. Go back there and study hard so that you can come out and you can help us straighten things out, okay? Because I think you have a lot to offer. So thanks again, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All righty.
So, Liberty, we've got a few minutes left to just summarize, and I know this was hard for both of us because, you know, we both had, and you bit your lip more than I did, and you're much more generous, and the reason why I have you on the show is because you're smarter than I am. And let me give you the last word before we leave it stone.
Well, I'm honestly speechless. I don't know what to say. I'll give you the last word.
Okay. Well, you know, I really do think that, you know, it really bothers me. As a Christian, it bothers me because I think these people have, you know, you said it to me, Liberty, when we first started, that the problem here was that the other side lacked empathy. And I think that's as good a way to put it as any. You know, we say walk a mile in our shoes or try to, you know, go the path that I've gone and then before you judge me. But I think that's true. I think these people don't care. Obviously, when we have a young man who stands up and says that he can't stand behind a criminal and then stands behind Donald Trump, or that he can't, you know, he's against drug dealers, so let's murder them. You know, I mean, I don't know what to say. It really, really, really bothers me. But, and let me end with this. I love Jimmy Kimmel. He shouldn't have been fired. We'll see you next week, folks, and we're going to play. This is for Liberty Jones, the smartest young woman on the planet. Come back and listen to Shadow Politics for Liberty Live. This song for you. This is the Beatles.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.